Welcome to Revenue Rehab, your one-stop destination for collective solutions to the biggest challenges faced by marketing leaders today. Now head on over to the couch, make yourself comfortable, and get ready to change the way you approach revenue. Leading your recovery is modern marketer, author, speaker, and chief operating officer at Tegrita, Brandi Starr.
Hello, 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 and welcome to another episode of Revenue Rehab. I am your host, Brandi Starr, and we have another amazing episode for you today. I am joined by Lee Hong Hicken. Lee Hong is the co-founder and CEO of They Said, a company that is disrupting the customer engagement space to drive business growth. With a background in user experience and B2B revenue growth, Lee Hong is transforming the way businesses interact with their customers by leveraging the power of journey pulsing and advanced analytics. Fun fact, Lee Hong started, They Said, when her daughter was just 3 weeks old, demonstrating her passion and commitment to innovation in the industry. Lee Hong has been described as a force of nature, recognizing her unwavering determination and drive to transform the customer engagement space. Welcome to Revenue Rehab. Your session begins now.
Thank you, Brandi, for having me. I'm very happy to chat with the audience today.
Awesome. I am excited to have you. And before we jump into our topic, I like to start us off with a little woo-saw moment that I call buzzword banishment. So tell me, what buzzword would you like to get rid of forever?
Well, I think the word has to be synergy. It's funny. I didn't know what it means, and ever since I got to business school at Berkeley Haas, that word is everywhere, mentioned every hour a couple of times. So I was like, what is synergy mean? It's too overused. So I mean, I haven't seen it too much in real life now, but still, it's a funny word.
Yes, I would agree. It is one that is overused. And we just finished our March Madness buzzword banishment. And synergy was one of the words that was in there that people wanted to banish in the past. So this is definitely one that is hated by many. So I will make sure that we will not talk about any synergy during this conversation. Well, now that we've gotten that off our chest, tell me, what brings you to Revenue Rehab today?
Yeah, so we had a conversation about, so I was actually in the path of interviewing 50 companies, CEOs, COOs, CROs. You were one of the person I interviewed about customer retention and revenue growth. In that, I actually have some, you know, maybe three major learnings, but lots of realization. And we had a fun chat about growing revenue, improving NRR, retention. And Brandi, you're like, oh, sounds like you are expert. Why don't you come talk to in my channel? I was like, why not? Just bring it. That's why I'm here.
Well, I love it. Yes. And that was such a fun conversation. And I am excited to continue to dive in some more as well. And I believe in setting intentions. It gives us focus. It gives us purpose. And most important, it gives our audience an understanding of what they should take away from our conversation today. And so what is your best hopes for our talk? What would you like people to take away from the conversation?
My best wish for this conversation is that I've learned so much for talking to, you know, the CEOs, COOs in the space. I learned so much about customer retention. I can't wait to share the knowledge with the industry. So I feel like it's only fair for me to give back to our community. So there's a lot of change in the last 18 months in the customer retention space. People are always constantly saying, what's going to happen? What's the future? You know, is CS important? How do we improve retention? So before I published my white paper, I wanted more people to learn about what I learned and benefit from the learning I did. So that's my biggest takeaway, sharing the knowledge in the community.
Awesome. Well, I want to start with what led us to this discussion. And, you know, in our conversation, I mentioned that I'm not a big fan of NPS and that, you know, we lean heavier on voice of customer and that value as a signal of churn. And, you know, you really echoed that. And so I'd love to have you share with the audience as to why you believe that it is voice of customer and not NPS that is the leading signal of churn. So I'd like to start there.
That's a long story. So NPS, I think a lot of people don't really like NPS. I would say, you know, more than 90% of the CS leaders I talked to, they were like, well, NPS is a vanity metric. My board wants it, right? So it's been here for a while. It started in the B2C world, and then now it's newly adopted into B2B world. It's actually proven that NPS has zero correlation with customer churn. I won't talk into the detail about this. There's a lot of data around it. If you are interested in knowing why NPS has zero correlation with NPS, I actually host a LinkedIn live debate a couple months ago. If you search on LinkedIn live debate, NPS is a vanity metric. It will tell you in detail why NPS has no correlation with churn. But I can tell you what has correlation with churn. The fact they responded to NPS has shown that if they respond to NPS, doesn't matter if they respond positively or negatively, they are less likely to churn. So it's not the NPS score that has anything to do with churn signal. It is the engagement of the fact the customer are willing to take time to give you the feedback that shows that indicates the churn signal.
Interesting. Yeah. And I mean, in general, I would say like engagement with a brand is, you know, kind of a clear indicator that if a company is engaged, that they are, you know, interested in continuing that relationship. And so that lack of engagement can serve as an indicator there as well. And we'll have to make sure to get the link to that LinkedIn Live so that we can link to it in the show notes as well. Because I do think that there are a lot of people that, you know, aren't fans of NPS, but can't completely articulate why they don't like it. And so that would be some good additional listening there.
Cool.
Awesome. And so I know you said that you had three major learnings from your interviews. And so I'd love to hear, like, really focusing on voice of customer and those indicators of churn. I'd love to hear which of those learnings, you know, what you learned and how they align to that.
Yeah, totally. So the first biggest learning I got from interviewing these 50 tech company CEOs and COOs is that when I ask them, how does your team know if your customer's about to churn, right? And 80% of the companies say, oh, we look at their product usage or the login sections, like product usage related metric, right? 20% don't do shit, right? They don't know, kind of guessing, you know, they want to hear from the CSM or the people who are managing the account. When I ask them, okay, so how does your team know if a customer is ready to buy more? Right, upsell, cross-sell question. And 100% of the company said, oh, we talk to our customers in the form of a customer reaching out to us, the QBRs, quality business reviews, checking meetings, or connection with the customers. So it's very interesting. So if you break down these two answers, so most people are trying to find whether or not a customer is going to churn by product usage related questions, which means they're looking at what customers do, okay? But in terms, how do you know if a customer want to buy more? They said they talk to customers, which means they want to look at what customers say. Isn't that interesting?
Yeah. It's like, you know, intuitively, I'd almost feel like it would be the opposite by looking at what they're doing, that you could predict what they may need and what they may want to buy. But the fact that, and I mean, I do, you know, especially in tech, like QBRs are huge, and those different CSM touch points of being able to learn what a company is doing in a technology, what they may want to be doing, what's happening in the business. So it seems like that same approach really needs to be deployed on the retention side.
I would actually want to challenge this. So the current status quo I found is not ideal in both situations. So using product usage related metric to either to detect churn or find upsell opportunities, I found that it's 1.5 months, 2 months too late. Let me tell you why. So let's say you use a product. Let's make it up. I don't know, Zoom. You know, we're using Zoom or Tan Tool. Let's say you're using this product and your product usage is normal. And then one day you have some technical itch, a glitch, you really hate it, or you reach out, they didn't resolve you. But as a human being, human beings don't like to change. So even though you're uncomfortable, you're going to continue using it, right? I'm like that. I'm not. Yeah. I don't want to change. Just continue using it until one day the pain is so great, or maybe accidentally it got dropped off. Then I don't use it. I make the change. That's probably like a month later. I was like, finally, I fed up. Well, okay, it's broken. It's disconnected. I'm not going to take time to reconnect. It's fine. So at first you feel like, okay, that's great. And then maybe 15 days later, 30 days later, you're getting used to not using the product. And then the product usage report trigger on the customer side. And then the CSM maybe get a quarterly report saying, hey, these are customers that doesn't use it. Okay. Then a month later, I receive an email said, low usage. You know, what do you need help? Can we talk? You see, it's a month and a half, 2 months late. So if you would have reached out to me 2 months before, when I'm like, I really don't want to change, someone help me, I would have happily take the option to like convince myself, remind myself why I bought this thing in the first place and keep using. Remember, I do not want to change. But after I have made the decision to change, take action to change and get used to the change, now you're going to come back and bring me back. Well, I don't want to change and get that back again.
So how do you scale that, or how do you operationalize that? I know those are two buzzwords that people often hate, but you know, I do agree that yes, you want to get in at that point where the friction is happening before they've kind of mentally accepted that they need to do something different. But we're talking about, you know, software companies with thousands or at least hundreds of customers. So what do we do to be able to recognize those key moments where someone is now at risk? Like, what data are we using? How do we do that? Like, because I do agree with the sentiment, but sometimes it's like, how does that practically show up?
Yes. So you what you're saying is like, getting to know the customer at the right time, what they need. It works. That's why most companies say we know how people will buy more by talking to them. But the problem, like you said, is how do you scale it? You can't be like one-on-one talking to every customer, every contact. We're all human. It's impossible, right? Especially in 2023, 2024, customers are wanting to do more with less, which means the number of rep to customer ratio has tripled since 10 years ago. So you can't talk to anyone. How do you operationalize it? So it's actually quite simple. If you look at this, we actually, if you look at the first principle kind of rule, like if you are trying to grow your existing customer, let me ask you, are you in the business of selling to strangers or not?
I wouldn't call them strangers. I'd say no.
No. OK, because existing customers, you have some relationship, right?
Yeah.
So if you want to sell more to this relationship you're keeping on, the key to sell more to them is by understanding more of their needs, their pain points, and then deliver more value to them at the right time. And when they are ready to buy more, you're right there. So in China, art of war, we have a saying, if you know yourself and you know your enemy, you win 100% of the time. So how do you scale the operation of knowing more about the customers? Right. So we actually revolutionized this. I'm not trying to plug in they said here, but we were interviewing 400 leaders, and they tell us that the reason why they couldn't take actionable insight to take action to improve customer value is they don't have actionable insight. So we need quick insight from the customer that's timely and reliable. So the program we have is called a journey posting. So what is journey posting? Think about a relationship with you, not a stranger. So let's say it's an existing customer. You understand this customer, maybe it's an enterprise customer, maybe it's SMB. What is their journey look like? What is their role? Are they a buyer or are they just a normal product user? You design their journey, and at each of the journey point, we ask one quick question that's related to the role. So think about this, right question at the right time at the for the right people. Then we use the insight to create a picture of what is customer's perception and annoyingness. And so the problem is today, most companies only do survey questions once a year. Like any year, you're going to do a survey questions. Or like you do NPS question once a quarter, right? Why not do more, right? If you can do more and you know these responses along the way, you actually have a lot of power. You know a lot, because traditional surveys, you would know what this person say, but you wouldn't know what this person say the last three times. And you also wouldn't know what their boss say, what their peers say, well, who is the report say. You can't really understand kind of the whole outreach of the customers.
Ah, okay. So by getting those, so I'll just give an example to make sure that I'm internalizing what you're saying. So for example, in the journey of new customer, they've been onboarded, rather than waiting to NPS or to the end of the year, you might ask a question specific to onboarding. And right. Then at, you know, their anniversary, you may ask another, you know, question specific to the fact that they've been with you for a year. And so what I'm hearing is, even when you can't have full conversations with your customers, it is getting those snapshots of how the relationship is going at those key moments.
That's right. It's, in fact, it's more frequent than that. So we are sending 12 to 16 posts a year. So depending on who you are and where your journey is, the frequency and the questions sent to you will be different. Also these questions are curated to find risk and growth opportunities. So question will be like, did the sales team oversold you? Are you considered competitors? You know, how easy is to justify the pricing? Are you gonna be the main champion managing the account, or a champion leaving the company? So some people describe it as like, these are the questions that's very valuable to the business, but uncomfortable to ask face to face, okay? And then you can actually ask to all target audience. So I have, for example, one of our customers say, our sales team will be working very hard and sell to the VP level. And then the VP level will pass on this account to the director level to get onboarded and get going. And then the director will pass on to the manager and the users to use the product. Now our CSM, customer success manager, is working with the managers. So if you send an NPS or like a pop-up survey in your product, you're going to send to the manager or user levels. You have zero visibility of what this VP and what this director said, because, you know, You get,
yeah, they're not in the you, product. You don't,
yeah, but if you think about these VP and director, they don't have time to check in with you 30 minutes every month or every quarter. They can't. They buy so many vendors, right? They this is not possible. But me as a buyer, I do want to make sure what I bought provides value to my team. So I don't have 30 minutes for you, but I will give you 5 seconds per month. I'll answer this 5 second question to see like how our relationship is going. And also by not responding it, you will also know something is wrong with the relationship.
Yeah, because no answer is an answer to a certain degree.
Exactly.
Okay, and so what I'm hearing is the thought process here is to be able to really scale what you're doing in voice of customer. Because I know a lot of times like voice of customer initiatives are, you know, more lengthy interviews that are happening at certain intervals, you know, to glean those insights. And so it is stretching that and even automating that in a bit so that you are able to touch more people more frequently to gain more insights.
That's right. One of the things people might challenge me is like, oh, okay, well, customers don't respond to the surveys, the survey fatigue, right? So most companies will have the problem where people don't respond to them. Our problem is opposite. We have too much responses that we actually had to filter and prioritize which one we want the team to take action on. Let me tell you why this is. So many people ask, okay, why do you guys have more responses than us? The industry average for NPS is like 1% to 4%. And then the long form survey is even worse. Part of the reason that we get a lot of response is one, it's just one question, it's quick. It's personalized for that person right time, right? And then the third thing is closing the loop. I don't know if you see this article that McKinsey have. I can share the screen with you if you want.
No, just tell me about it.
Okay, so McKinsey write this article said, the survey fatigue means like a lack of motivation to participate in surveys. Okay. And a common belief that surveys fatigue is driven by the number and the length of surveys deployed. Like too many surveys, too long. That turned out to be a myth. What we found is the number one driver of survey fatigue was the perception that your organization would not act on the result. Okay. So, which is like, if me as a customer take time to give you feedback, if I know my feedback is going to a place where dreams dies, why should I give you feedback? Right. But if I know every time I give feedback, I hear from you, maybe you won't be able to take action on every single one of it. But you acknowledge it, you hear from me, you take action on some of my things and try to improve on other complaints. This is great. I'll continue to give you feedback. But if you don't, like most NPS or like normal surveys, you got a big project, 2 week stop, do the surveys, the data is analyzed, get to the exact, do talk about this. But the customer side loop is never closed. Maybe the extremely unhappy customers with high social influence, like a lot of fans in LinkedIn, maybe those will be hurt. But most of us, we won't get hurt.
And so what does good look like when you've got the data? So let's assume whether it's using a platform like they said or capturing data in some other form, let's say that we have these touch points. We have customers responding.
Yeah.
What does good look like in terms of how brands can close that loop? Like, how is the data used in a way to impact the customer?
Great. I think there's three different levels of the goodness. Typically, the short term, like within a month, you see that you find some customers maybe you're lucky enough to catch them before they make the change. The product usage doesn't show, but they are already annoyed with you. You save those accounts. Okay. So a typical example is if you guys use a tool called ClickUp, their productivity tool, they actually have a post program like we do. And they are saying they're saving 2 customers per day from this. Obviously, they have a lot of customers. So every year they're saving, say, 700 something, almost 700 customers a year. That's huge, right? So that's layer number one. Layer number two is usually come in 2 or 3 months after you start a program, you're seeing upsell, cross-sell deals being closed from these signals. And the reason why is you might be able to ask some upsell, cross-sell questions, and about 1% of them, you just need to ask because they don't know that you have this service. You capture them. This is shallow kind of things. But the deeper one, about another 15% more of upsell, cross-sell will come from the customer who respond to you negatively. They actually are more likely to buy more from you because if they complain and you hurt them, you resolve their problem, and they were like, oh, you build the trust in this. Remember, the upsell cross-sell is not because you're being aggressive, a smart salesperson. It's because you deliver more value. It's because you earn the trust through delivering value. Then they're like, okay, what else can you do for me, right? So that is the second tier, usually 2 or 3 months after you can see more upsell, cross-sell opportunity close. So we have an example where a customer, usertesting.com, they got a response from a customer. The AE was like, I don't know this person. Why don't they give me a 2-star rating, right? It's like, how well do you know how to use user testing? It turned out that the champion who was account holder already left the company. This person is brand new. So the account manager doesn't know this new user exists until the responses from they said come back. Mm. Okay. So if you look at this in the last 2 years, 30% of Americans change jobs. So you constantly hear people saying, oh, you know, I have a champion left company. Now I lost a power user. I have a newbie that I don't know exists. They didn't go through normal onboarding. And if their pain is there untreated for a long time, it's going to churn. But because we discovered that, the AE reached out, teach the person how to do it. They were like, oh, this is great. Then they get the trust. Then they actually refer to their design team to use user testing. So you turn if 100K about to churn account to a 200K upsell opportunities. So that's pretty good, right? Okay. So it doesn't take that much effort. The third tier of the what good look like in terms of understanding the customer is the most powerful. So most companies today, even your larger company, are constantly trying to find product market fit, are constantly trying to add value to their customers. But most companies today have very limited resources. So what decision should we make? And most companies don't know what to do, and they might team be argument. I would say companies say we need to be data driven, but the data are valued differently. The highest quality data should come from your customers. And so one of our customers had used the data to find out their SMBs receive the least value from them, but they're sucking up 90% of the company's resources in support. So what do we do as a team? They actually pivot to a new product line that not only improve the retention and ward off a cheap copycat competitor, they also get 300% new revenue growth the second year. So that is good look like, is using customer data to find new growth lever for your company.
Okay. And so my last question is a more tactical question in how is it best? Because I know in some cases, like thinking about traditional voice of customer programs or even NPS scores, like when people are collecting them, there is a challenge internally of how do you disseminate that information in a meaningful way so that different people know what to do with it? So for example, you talked about places where the data is an indicator of product market fit. There's certain things that I'm hearing should probably, you know, be in front of the product team so that as they're developing the roadmap, there's certain things that, you know, I feel like marketing needs to know in terms of how they're messaging. You need the AE or CSMs to know so that they can address, you know, customers directly in whether it's opportunities or risk of churn. Like there's a lot of ways that you have shared that this data can be used. How are you seeing companies put the mechanisms in place to effectively get this to people so that everybody has their marching orders and knows what to do when they see, you know, so if I'm a CSM and I see this, how do I know what I'm supposed to do with that? And I'm dumbing it all the way down because obviously, you know, someone good at their job is going to have some understanding of what to do. But I know when it comes to all the data that we collect, many organizations have challenges with how they get that data in the hands of people in a meaningful way. And so I'd love to hear any insights that you have, you know, at a more tactical level of, you know, if we're sucking at this now and we start collecting data, what do I need to be thinking about? How do I need to be, you know, communicating internally so that we can see all of the benefits that you have described?
Totally. So that's, it's actually pretty easy for customers like product engineering teams that not directly interact with the customers. But if you want to build a customer first culture, right? The easiest way is to put the data in front of team. And then what I've often seen is like, if you use Slack or Teams, get these customers, what customers say, you know, into those channels where people can see what's going on. And I've seen, like for example, Amazon or some other companies, Zoom CEO, actually, he actually every Monday will read customer sentiment to the team out loud, pick a few and read it. And from the big thing. So I think ClickUp also do that. They have a channel where everyone can go in and look at what customers say. So those are the ones that you want your company to have a mindset of the customer they're serving and what they're saying. The second tier is, what about a customer, the team member who are in the front line and who need to react to the customer's needs and plan? One thing I would say, some principle is we usually set up a playbook, meaning like if customer respond this, you should do this. And we are the only one to have this already automated, and you just respond, wait for the customer to get back to you after our automation sent out, or wait customer to book meetings with you. That's easy. But if you don't have that, that's okay. Keep in mind that some people are afraid of customer feedback. They think it's toxic, it's noise that will kill the company. So I wanted to bring this out. Yeah. It's oftentimes the funders, like some funder will say, if you ask the customer what they want, they will say they want a faster horse, right? Obviously, you and I care about customer feedback and stuff. But I do think for the people who fear about customer feedback and following blindly and fear about they destroy your company, my advice is that listen to the customer's pains and needs, not solutions. Right? You can't build something where customers say, I want this interface to be pink. That's a solution. But we'll say, okay, why do you need this? What problem are you solving? And then you can't solve every problem for every customer. And honestly, customers are not expecting you to solve every problem, but at least acknowledge it and then solve some as you see that improve your company. So that's kind of my advice on that. I would say, you know, in terms of taking action with the customer, it's better from the executive level to design what you want your team to do. And also is a team effort. Retention is a team effort. I rarely see people churn because they don't like their CSM or their people. It's product, it's pricing, it's the service, all the components that make up to that. So it's kind of a go-to market, product market fit that affect the whole company. So that's why it's like it's important for other department not, that might not directly involve in retention to see that, because their action and their priority will impact whether or not the customer stay with you long term.
Awesome. Well, talking about our challenges is just the first step, and nothing changes if nothing changes. And so in traditional therapy, the therapist gives the client some homework, but here at Revenue Rehab, we like to flip that on its head and ask you to give us some homework. And so, you know, I really believe in making sure that, you know, we have clear next steps. And so for those people who are listening and recognizing that they are not really capturing voice of customer or tapping into the predictive power of that data, where would you suggest they start? What's that one thing that they can do to move in the right direction?
Well, first you identify, okay, the insights, what insights would you want to get? Is it getting from a stranger or a long-term relationship? And think about what you would wish you know from the customers. And then maybe the easiest thing is swap out your NPS questions or add a few questions that, you know, that's something that you wanted to know. Maybe a little bit uncomfortable to ask customer face-to-face, but you do want to know it. Write them down and then ask them, either on the next call with them or in the NPS survey to kind of replace NPS and going out more often. That's, I would say, the easiest way to do it. I'm basically trying to teach you how to hack us.
Well, I appreciate it. I have really enjoyed our discussion, but that's our time for today. But before we go, tell our audience how they can connect with you. And we talked a little bit about what they said does, but definitely give the shameless plug for anyone who is listening and, you know, what you've talked about the product has resonated with them so that they fully understand what it is.
Great. Thank you for the opportunity. So they said, you can find us on theysaid.io, the website. And what we do is we have a patent pending customer perceived value metric and customer perceived value journey posting way to find insights that proactively detect risks and growth signal along your customer journey. Basically, what we are doing is we help your companies improve NRR, net revenue retention, by 5% and discover 20% more upsell cross-sell pipelines while reducing your team's manual work. So that's what we do. If you're interested, check out our website. Also, if you just want to know kind of open mind about what is the latest and newest way in solving the existing customer revenue space, follow me on LinkedIn. I publish a lot of untraditional thoughts about how to do this.
Awesome. Well, we will make sure to link both to your LinkedIn and to They Said. So wherever you are listening or watching this podcast, check the show notes and those links will be there. Well, Lee Hong, I really, really appreciate you joining me. I have enjoyed the discussion. I've learned some things, which is my favorite part of hosting Revenue Rehab, is I am continuing to learn from my guests.
The pressure is mine as well. Let's keep in touch. Thank you so much.
Definitely. I can't believe we are at the end. I hope you enjoyed my conversation with Lee Hong. Until next time.
You've been listening to Revenue Rehab with your host, Brandi Starr. Your session is now over, but the learning has just begun. Join our mailing list and catch up on all our shows at revenuerehab.live. We're also on Twitter and Instagram at Revenue Rehab. This concludes this week's session. We'll see you next week.